thanks for listening to the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Sponsored by FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com, the leader in single-day fantasy sports contests.
Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news, interviews from the biggest names in the industry, and game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll. Here's your host, the man with the best beard in daily fantasy, Crazy Gaby.
Hello there. As the voice said, I am Crazy Gaby, and this is a very special edition of the Daily Fantasy Baseball Fix. Actually going to be just me solo, and none of the fixins, none of the trimmings that you are used to receiving on a day-by-day basis. In fact, we are going to launch straight into this five-game early slate after I take a moment to talk about our sponsor site, FanDuel.com. And we're just going to go over those five early games. Recognize that there is a five-game slate that starts at noon. And I wanted to make sure you guys had a podcast to listen to for that slate specifically. Make sure you check back in a little bit later in the day, and you'll be able to listen to Hoop and I with our normal shenanigans and insight on the Daily Fantasy Baseball Fix, the main podcast for the day. Without further ado, our sponsor site, FanDuel.com, has two qualifiers running tonight, a World Fantasy Baseball Championship and a Chicago Fantasy Baseball Championship. The World Fantasy Baseball Championship Q is $1,065, and the Chicago Fantasy Baseball Championship is a $100 Q. Both of these will run this evening for the later slate, so you won't actually be able to enter those for the early slate, but just making you aware of their existence and letting you know you should play in some contests at FanDuel.com this evening. Let's move straight on into analysis for this early-only slate. And we started off with the Detroit Tigers taking on the Cleveland Indians. 8-run total here. Justin Verlander was supposed to get the start. He's been scratched due to not feeling 100%. And good old Buck Farmer, one of the best names in daily fantasy. Hell, one of the best names in all of sports, period, is taking the mound to square off against one of my personal favorites, Carlos Carrasco. Any of you who have listened to me before know that Carrasco is a pet player of mine. I continue to believe he is a stud, a top 15-20 pitcher in the majors. And I understand the ERA won't back it up. And frankly, with the Indians and their defensive woes, that's not changing anytime soon. I will concede one fact about Carrasco. He's given up a lot of hard contact this season. Hard contact rate sits at 33.5%. And the BABIP is 347. Now, the BABIP is probably a little bit of his own doing with the hard contact he's giving up, but it also has a little bit to do with the Indians' defense being piss-awful. One thing I will say, too, about Carlos Carrasco, I guess that would be the second thing, not one thing, but the second thing I'll say about Carlos Carrasco is that he challenges hitters. He likes to go after people, and a lot of times that does leave balls sort of vulnerable in the zone. I'm a lot less likely to buy into the fact that he's a bad pitcher because of the hard contact rate, and I think it's more the fact that he's just challenging hitters and giving them pitches to hit, trying to initiate swing and misses, which is happening with the 12.1% swing and strike rate. That's a very high, 2.5 points above league average, but still, just a little bit of caution here with the Detroit Tigers being on the opposing side. Now, the only reason I'm even diving into such an in-depth picture of Carlos Carrasco, you know, on a normal slate, pitcher against the Tigers, if he's a good pitcher, he's a tournament play, don't touch him in cash games. Well, we don't quite have that luxury today, especially on two starting pitcher sites. On one starting pitcher site, you can just go all in with Chris Sale, who we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But on double starting pitcher sites, you kind of have some tough decisions to make. And Carlos Carrasco, in my opinion, when you consider all the contextual factors, is right up there with Cole Hamels for consideration as your number two alongside Chris Sale. So just keep in mind that there are risks. There are definitely some positives as well. And an early-only slate with five games is always going to necessitate that you take a few additional risks. And just remember that everybody has to take those risks as well. So it's not like just you out there vulnerable, kind of leaving your lineups in the open. Everybody else is going to have to do something similar. If it's not with their pitchers, it'll be with their hitters. So just know that this is kind of the game you play on a short slate. Don't be too concerned about it. Don't be too hesitant to throw lineups out there that look a little suboptimal, because with a five-game slate, every single lineup is going to be suboptimal in some way. If we're looking at hitters on the Indian side against Buck Farmer, who of course is no great shakes, he was a good pitcher until he got to about AAA. Then he really started struggling, kind of caught up to the majors out of necessity, and just not a high strikeout guy. Doesn't really struggle with command yet, but that has been an issue that's plagued him in the past, so it's something we should certainly keep our eye on if that starts to become an issue in the majors as well. No reason that it should not. And really not a whole lot to draw from here outside of his minor league work since he's only pitched 5 innings this season. I will say this, Michael Brantley, extremely low-priced on FanDuel. $3,200. He's one of the top guys against right-handed pitching over the past 2 years and counting. 153 WRC+, 386 WOBA, and a 184 ISO matched up with a Victor Martinez-esque 6.9% strikeout rate. Just a phenomenal player. And somebody at 3.2K that you should try to fit into all your cash game lineups if you can. Probably pound for pound the best play on the slate. Right up there with Jose Abreu, another guy that we'll talk about in just a minute. Moving on over to the next game, we've got Toronto at Tampa Bay. Marco Estrada and Nathan Carnes matched up against one another. It's basically a pick 'em between these two with a 7.5 run total. And the first thing you always notice with the Blue Jays is the huge park downgrade when they're not at the Rogers Center. Tropicana, not the worst ballpark in the world, but definitely a major step down from the Rogers Center. And so that right there takes a little bit of the luster off of all the Toronto bats. But outside of that, the luster is still shining, my friends. Not a lot of options, especially if you're going for big bats on this early-only slate. There's a real void of big bats in good spots. That makes Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista premier options, especially in tournaments. It's going to be difficult in cash games to fit either of those guys in with Chris Sale. Believe me, I was fooling around with FanDuel early-only lineups here for about 20 minutes before I started the podcast, and it was damn near impossible to get a lineup that I actually liked with either of those guys in it. But in tournaments, definitely a premium on these guys. You're going to have your Toronto stacks, of course. You won't be able to stack the Blue Jays with Chris Sale, just FYI, before you try it. It's not going to happen. It won't work. But, you know, you can also target some guys like Russell Martin, some guys like Kevin Pillar, Ezekiel Carrera, Chris Colabelle. Sorry, that was me trying to suppress my gag reflex while talking about Chris Colabelle, since you all love him so much. But anyways, I digress. You can look at any of those options, and Nate Carnes is definitely the kind of pitcher you want to be picking on. He's not a terrible pitcher at all. Looks like he's settling in, even though his ERA is around 3.50, as a true 4 ERA type pitcher. And the reason I say that there's some room for him to regress closer to a 4 ERA is because he carries a 34.7% hard contact rate, but it's only backed up with a 7.7% swinging strike rate. And remember, we talked about with Carlos Carrasco, I'm more inclined to believe that hard hit rate is just a byproduct of him going after hitters. Well, Nathan Carnes is not going after hitters. 7.7% swing strike rate. If he is, it's not working. And the hard contact rate is definitely something that's concerning after 79 innings of work this season. Outside of that, you know, just your staples. Josh Donaldson, Jose Reyes, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista. Stack them up. And then on the Tampa Bay side, as much as we dislike, especially in cash games, taking these guys who can get platooned out after two or three at-bats, like Kevin Kiermaier and David DeJesus, I think those guys are actually going to prove to be very necessary plays on the early-only slate. David DeJesus in particular at 2,300 against Marco Estrada and his home run issues. DeJesus is not a big power guy in the first place, but a 154 ISO matched up with Estrada's issues with dingers, and they're rearing their head this season as well, 1.12 home runs per nine innings. Definitely something you can match up, and Kevin Kiermaier crushes right-handed pitching. He has done ever since he entered the league. He has a 206 ISO, and he's only 2,800. Definitely a good bet of anyone under a 3K mark at FanDuel to go for a dong on the day. Let's move forward and talk about the Chicago White Sox taking on the Minnesota Twins. 7-run total here. Chris Sale is a minus 135 favorite. And really, that just has to do with how bad the Chicago White Sox offense is. If he had anything resembling an offense behind him against Phil Hughes, who has just been a gas can this season, he would be probably minus 180, minus 200 here. But unfortunately, it is what it is. The Twins, known as a team who hit lefties very well, and they do. There's a little bit of truth to that. But they're not some massive superpower like the Blue Jays or the Tigers or the Marlins or the Cubs or the Rays. They're not one of those teams. They sit actually with the 15th best mark with a 98 WRC plus, 312 wOBA, and a 138 ISO versus lefties this season. Really what it is there's a couple batters on that team who managed to crush lefties. Brian Dozier and Torrey Hunter come to mind. Trevor Plouffe as well. Outside of those guys, though, the rest of the lineup's sort of impotent, and when you got Chris Sale on the mound, you're just not concerned. The dude, first of all, is functionally unhittable when it comes to left-handed batters. They cannot touch him, so you can pretty much count any left-handed bat you see in the Minnesota Twins lineup as an automatic out. And then as far as righties are concerned, he's got the stuff to contend with them. He's got the high strikeout stuff. I think it's like his swinging strike rate over his past like X number of starts. I think it's like 4, 5, 6 starts. His swinging strikeout rate is higher than the league average strikeout rate. That is stupid. I cannot stress to you enough how ridiculous that stat is. On the season now, with 88.2 innings pitched, a 34.3% K rate, and a 16% swinging strike rate. Just a 22% hard contact rate. I mean, the dude is actually the best pitcher in baseball right now. I feel very confident saying that he just does not get the due that he deserves because he plays for the White Sox and continually has his leads blown by the bullpen that is among the worst in the majors. So Chris Sale, load him up in your cash games. You can't trust any of these other guys the same way that you can trust him. And Phil Hughes, he had the very pronounced reverse splits last year. Those have actually sort of gone away this year, and he's just been bad. I think he's above a 330 wOBA versus lefties and righties. And in the past, you know, before he made the changes he made last season, he was actually much worse against left-handed batters and had quite a few struggles against them. So I'm not really sure what to make. I'm just picking on him with both-handedness of hitters. And as much as I despise the Chicago White Sox right now because their offense is awful, you kind of have to go with some of them because of how cheap they are and how decent. I don't say great. I say decent. How decent they have been against right-handed pitching historically. The only one on the team who has really been doing anything this year is Jose Abreu, who has some great numbers against righties since he entered the league. 386 wOBA and 236 ISO. Adam LaRoche right behind him, but man, he's just been a disappointment and a half this season. Maybe he's starting to get it together. He's had a couple of good games in a row now. 371 wOBA since the beginning of 2014 and a 208 ISO against right-handed pitching. I will be moving in on those two, and then Adam Eaton also since the beginning of 2014. Has himself a 113 WRC plus, 337 wOBA, and 121 ISO. Not elite by any means, but for 2,400, somebody that might just be necessary to make your lineups work today. So all those guys are options, and you know, any little random dude here or there batting near the top of the order is definitely somebody you can throw in there against Phil Hughes. Hughes is one of the worst pitchers on this slate, and it pains me to say that because I like Hughes a lot, but it looks like some of the magic from last season has decidedly run out. Next game up is the Houston Astros taking on the Los Angeles Angels. 7.5 run total and basically a pick'em between Lance McCullers and Matt Shoemaker. And both of these guys are very interesting tournament plays. I actually have Shoemaker in quite a few tournament lineups so far, and Lance McCullers in even more tournaments. McCullers looking like he might just be the real deal. We're through 40 innings now, which is really, you know, a point where we can start to draw some observations, if not conclusions, at least observations, and we can start to give them meaningful impact when we're making our decisions. 28.1% strikeout rate, 10.9% swinging strike rate. He's not struggling with control as much as you would think a first-timer in the majors would be doing. A 7.9% base on ball rate is by no means great, but it definitely gets the job done. And his FIP and XFIP mostly agree that this is a pretty good pitcher. Hard contact rate of 26.5% means he's not getting beat up really badly when he does miss his spots and the ball gets hit. Listen, Lance McCullers might just be your GPP lineup that saves the day for you because, like I said earlier, with Chris Sale, it's really hard to fit some of the big bats in there. If you're going to stack a team like the Toronto Blue Jays in tournaments on this early-only slate, you got to have a guy like Lance McCullers, and there's no way around it. The Angels have been surging against right-handed pitching. Remember, they were like a bottom-five team for quite some time this season, and they went on a little bit of a tear, and mainly it was Albert Pujols doing the damage, but they have climbed the ranks to become a basically league-average team against righties. 96 WRC+, 301 wOBA, and a 145 team ISO, but I really count them as more of like a top-third team against right-handed pitching because they were just so cold to start the season. I'm not going to give that much precedence. What I'm really going to give precedence is the fact that since they got their shit together, they have actually been a top five team against right-handed pitching. So a little deceiving when you look at the chart, and always kind of good to keep that stuff in mind when you're evaluating season-long statistics. I like using season-long stats, but you really have to use them from the first day and then keep track in your mind whenever a team is moving up or moving down the ranks, because there's always going to be a real-life correlation. So, you know, I physically every day have logged into my FanGraphs custom charts that I have made, and I've seen the Angels rise from, like, the 29th ranked team to where they are now, the 16th ranked team. And you really have to do that. You can't just log on every once in a while, look at the season-long stats, and expect those to tell you much. The movers and the shakers, as they would say, is really what is important. Let's go ahead and talk about a couple of hitters for the Houston Astros before we move over and talk about the Angels. They are on fire right now, and the Astros actually come into this game with a top 10 offense, 7th ranked offense against right-handed pitching. We often think of them as a team of lefty mashers, but they've been able to hit right-handed pitching very nicely as well. And the stark contrast here is a 26% strikeout rate, which is kind of phenomenal considering they're the 7th best team against righties. They also have by far the highest strikeout rate. Only the Cubs are in their territory with a 25.1% strikeout rate versus right-handed pitching. And then also, the Astros have a 193 ISO, so they have the highest strikeout rate versus right-handed pitching, and they also have the second highest isolated power. The Dodgers have a 196 mark. So this is really the definition, the actual definition of a boom-bust team. That means that you definitely want some of the hitters against Matt Shoemaker. Matt Shoemaker, definitely an above-average pitcher, even though his ERA does not indicate it this year. But you're also not so confident that these guys can't come out and lay a complete egg that you would want to go all in on your tournaments and especially your cash games. So for me, this represents, I've said it the last 2 days, it didn't work out on Monday. It worked out very nicely last night if you happen to stack up the Astros. This to me represents the penultimate tournament option. A lot of people are going to be off them because they're out of Minute Maid Park especially. But you definitely need to stack them, in my opinion, each and every night unless they are against the elitist of the elite pitchers, because any time they could go off. And one other statistic here that really kind of solidifies my love for a little bit of light exposure to the Astros today is Matt Shoemaker's 32.4% hard contact rate. We want a high hard contact rate with a team that has a lot of isolated power because, you know, it makes sense. When they make hard contact, the ball is going yard. So just a little bit of extra incentive there. On the other side, with the Los Angeles Angels and Matt Shoemaker, listen, the guy's been very serviceable, right at a 9.5% swinging strike rate, which is generally accepted to be the league average, an above-average 21.6% K rate. And the rest of his profile looks pretty good until you get to the home runs per nine innings of 1.86 and the home run to fly ball ratio of 15.3%. Considering those West Coast ballparks that he pitches in, including his home ballpark, I do not expect this number to stay as high as it is. In fact, I think that it's going to come down sooner rather than later. Maybe not tonight with the Astros, but he's not going to continue giving up almost two home runs per nine innings. His ERA sits at 5.2 because of that fact, but the FIP and the XFIP both agree he's a little bit better of a hurler, and I think that he's one of the better options. Look, a guy with a pulse who has a strikeout rate anywhere near league average or above, definitely kind of like the Astros, the anti-Astros. You got to have some shares of him in tournaments as well, because he could just luck sack into double-digit strikeouts by virtue of the Astros just not being on their game today afternoon, whenever the hell you happen to be listening to this. Let's go ahead and take it to the last game here, Philadelphia Phillies against the New York Yankees. 7.5 run total here, and Ivan Nova, interestingly enough, is a -130 favorite over Cole Hamill. Sat out his last start with a little bit of an ailment. Now he is back. He is looking to rock Yankee Stadium. And what's interesting to me is the line has already moved quite a bit in the last couple of hours since this was posted. -101 for Cole Hamels to start, now +120. I'm not saying I'm going to stack Yankees against him liberally, but I will have a couple of Yankee stacks in tournaments. Cole Hamels, obviously a phenomenal pitcher, not somebody I want to pick on a lot, but first start coming back after a little discomfort. Yankee Stadium, not the best place to be making that start. Yankees are above league average against left-handed pitching. They actually sit as the sixth best team with a 323 WOBA and a 171 team ISO. So there's definitely some value on a short slate of stacking up some Yankees in a couple of your lineups. Make sure you don't put Cole Hamels in there. Some people accidentally do that, take the pitcher against their hitters, especially on a short slate where there are less pitching options and you're just trying to make all the salaries work. Be careful not to do that. But do get some shares of guys like A-Rod in there. You know, Alex Rodriguez, he could definitely end up being a very nice asset for you tomorrow. Chris Young is pretty good against left-handed pitchers. Maybe he gets a nice premier lineup spot. A couple of guys I want to mention as being demonstratively worse against left-handed pitching than they are righties. Chase Headley and Carlos Beltran, both since 2013, have been much worse against lefties than they are against righties. I'm not saying don't play them in your Yankee stack. I'm just saying that give them a lot less precedence than you would if there was a right-handed pitcher on the mound. And as far as the Phillies are concerned, Ivan Nova is a guy who's had some struggles in the past. He had one season where I think both of his wOBAs to both handedness of batters were over 350. I mean, he's shown some gas canny issues in the past, and this is not a great stadium for him, of course. But it's also the Phillies. Now, I'm not picking on the Phillies with Ivan Nova. I think we've learned our lesson that you can't just take a bad pitcher against the Phillies and expect them to do well. It's not really working out. Hell, sometimes it doesn't work with good pitchers. I think I'm going to take a few Phillies bats in tournaments. I'm not sure about the full-on stack yet because with Chase Utley out especially, I don't know what that lineup's going to look like. It was already pretty ugly. Who could tell how bad it's going to look now? But I do know this. Mikhail Franco is an absolute beast and is somebody that if you don't have exposure to him tomorrow, you could easily just be boxing yourself out of cash in any tournament, maybe even your cash games. He's not just a lefty masher. He's a guy who has been hitting right-handed pitching very well since he came into the majors. 142 plate appearances, 368 wOBA, and a 219 ISO with just a 13.4% strikeout rate. You got to figure he's one of the better bets on the day tomorrow to take one deep. So somebody that I will definitely have quite a bit of exposure to. That wraps up your early only analysis. I hope you guys liked that. Remember, you might be able to segue this podcast right into listening to the full-sized. This was the bite-sized podcast. That'll be the full-sized. I think it's called the share size is what they say, like the sharing size or whatever. They're trying to encourage people to not be fat asses and eat the entire king-size candy bar. If you ever notice that, like, take a look. It doesn't say, like, king size anymore. Or maybe it does say king size, but it says, like, sharing. I don't know. All I know is that, Michelle Obama, thanks a lot, trying to make us all less fat. This is America. I'll be fat if I want. And by the way, I have no clue how the end of this podcast devolved into this conversation. This is what happened when Hoop is not here to talk with me. So I sincerely apologize to all of you. And with that, I will bid you farewell. I'll see you a little bit later. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Head to rotogrinders.com and check out all of our daily fantasy content. Remember to follow us on Twitter @RotoGrinders for breaking news and expert analysis.